Well, folks, I've got a couple of guests here in the studio and running for different positions. But before we get into that, I wanted to play something for you. And good morning to you, Kelly, here. It's the fourth day of November, and this election is just creeping up on us. And it is really something that we have never experienced before. And it is... I don't even know how to describe what's going on, but I think most people understand this is a once-in-a-lifetime election, and the stakes are pretty high. I believe if Hillary gets in, as partisan as this sounds, this country as we used to be, is our goose is cooked. So before I get in with my guests, I've just got a little bit to share with you. The reason that the FBI, from an evidence standpoint, got into this reinvestigation of Hillary has to do something with secret recordings that were made of Hillary Clinton's staff. The other part of that is that James Comey, his wife apparently was trying to help him to keep it together before the FBI was just completely imploded. But here's a little bit from Ed Klein. I think that you'll enjoy this clip. Why Comey jumped at the chance to reopen Clinton's case. And all the battleground states are close, and they say that Trump now looks like he has got a shot to take Michigan. But here is on why Comey jumped at the chance to reopen the Clinton case.
The president believes that Director Comey is a man of integrity, he's a man of principle, and he's a man of good character. These same character traits are what led a strong majority of Democratic and Republican senators to confirm him to this job. These are the traits that led the president to select him to be the director of the FBI.
Well, after FBI Director James Comey recommended against indicting Hillary Clinton, or charges, that is to say, and considered the investigation into her email over back in July, he was reportedly overwhelmed with resignation requests and regret. This, according to a close source of Comey's, who spoke to writer Ed Klein, who joins us right now live. His book is called Guilty of As Sin. Ed, nice to have you.
Great to be here.
Okay. So ever since July, apparently the rank-and-file FBI agents were really steamed at him, and inside the FBI, the atmosphere is toxic.
When James Comey would walk down the hallways of the FBI and say good morning,
right,
people wouldn't talk back to him. That's how bad things had been in the FBI. There's a sense that he disgraced the institution and brought it down. And he has been suffering because this is a guy who is an evangelical Catholic who gets down on his knees every night and prays to God.
Mm-hmm.
He has this sense of moral rectitude. He thinks that he knows what's right. And it put him in a direction that actually mm-hmm. was a disaster for him and the institution.
So if he had a do-over, would he have suggested charges?
I think he would have because... Yeah. According to my sources, he and his wife, Patrice, who are very, very close, not only in their marriage, but in his professional life, she has been telling him, Jim, you did the wrong thing. You've got to redeem yourself yeah. somehow. So when he learned about the emails in Anthony Weiner's laptop,
mm-hmm.
he jumped at the chance
sure.
to reopen this case.
Because two things. One, apparently he had been talking to his wife, Patrice, according to your report, that he was depressed that so many resignation letters from FBI agents were stacking up on his desk, but also the harm he felt that was being done to the FBI.
That's right. Now, he hasn't signed these resignation letters because he's hoping that he can undo the damage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think one of the interesting things here is that the president of the United States has so politicized the Justice Department that Loretta Lynch has been interfering in this entire investigation from the very, very beginning and has given Comey a hard time at every step of the way because
mm-hmm.
the president, the Justice Department are all trying to get Hillary Clinton elected
sure.
president.
One of our stories today is a Reuters report that apparently Comey revealed that they found, you know, reportedly over half a million of these email on this Weiner laptop. And the day before, on Thursday, Comey met with Lynch. And Lynch said, if you release a letter to Congress that violates policy, longstanding DOJ policy. And then he said, are you ordering me to keep this bombshell a secret? And she said nothing.
Yes. And the reason for that is because James Comey has a reputation of threatening to resign if he doesn't get his way.
Mm-hmm.
And can you imagine 7 days before the election, if the director of the FBI resigned? I mean, this would throw the entire justice system into complete chaos.
And we opened this segment with some sound bites of Josh Earnest talking glowingly about Director Comey being a man of integrity. But in your in one of your earlier books, didn't Barack Obama regard appointing James Comey as the worst mistake of his presidency?
The worst mistake of my presidency. Now, today, they're coming out and saying, oh, no, this guy has got complete integrity. Now, the president doesn't want to look as though he's interfering in the election either.
Right.
So this is a complete mess at the very top of our criminal justice system. I would call it a constitutional crisis in the making at this very moment.
Donald Trump said the same thing. All right.
All right. So Ed Klein, and he's written some books that I actually have purchased and read, one of which was The Amateur, describing Barack Obama's approach to the office. But a person who cannot be called an amateur, John Zimmerman, is here. Good morning, John. Good to have you in the studio. Thank you for bringing me breakfast. And I can say that is something that Brad Cates never thought of, was to bring me breakfast. But anyway, how's it going?
Well, you know, Kelly, it's always good to be on your show. And, you know, in the Navy, you know, I'm a retired Navy guy. And,
Commander.
And we have a habit of taking care of our own. So, you know, that's why I brought you breakfast. I knew you'd be hungry this morning.
Well, I appreciate that. And too bad you didn't have Brad Cates in your squadron.
Well, you know, I didn't know he was going to be here. I probably would have actually brought him something too. But
either that, or you would have skipped it.
Or I would have skipped it. Yeah. But no, I figured the coffee. You know, that's the lifeblood. You know, of anybody in service. You know, we all drink coffee, and
anybody in a studio too.
Yeah, and I figured, you know, anybody gets up this time in the morning has to have a cup of coffee.
It's the one thing I look forward to every day. That first cup.
Yeah. The first cup is the best cup.
Absolutely.
And of course, it never ends. You know,
yeah.
The cup never ends.
Right, the bottomless cup.
Yeah, a bottomless cup.
All right, so let's remind folks again what the area that you're running for.
I'm running for House District 39, and that's basically goes from Fairacres north and everything, pretty much west of the Rio Grande, all the way up. It kind of skips through the middle of Hatch into Sierra County to actually the Caballo exit, if you're familiar with that.
Wow.
Actually, not Caballo, but I meant the Hillsboro exit. And then it goes west all the way into Grant County and encompasses all the mining district, Hurley, Baird, Santa Clara.
Yeah. All right. So you, I think, have probably noticed that this year there has been a concerted effort to swing the House back to the Democrats.
Oh yeah, I've had quite a bit of hate mail, mailers, and you know, attack radio ads, and you know, I've tried to just stick to the facts. You know, I don't, I'm not going to accuse somebody of something that they haven't done. You know, everybody has to stand on their own record, and you know, that's who I am as a person. Stand on your own record. You can't defend lies, so why tell a lie in the first place? And so best thing to do is just say it like it is, and then, you know, leave the rest up to the people that are voting.
All right. So what issues, things do you see as coming up that it's important that you would stay in office to help deal with?
Well, we've got a couple things, especially over in Grant County. You know, Some years back, we have a mining act that's 25 years old, or more than 25 years old, and there was some ambiguities in that in the mining act, and it's really restrictive. And through about 10 years, 8 to 10 years of very very intense back and forth negotiation with the state environmental department under Democrat governor. during Richardson's time, they come up with something called a copper rule. And basically, it really restricts, but it details very, very uniquely what the mining industry has to do, the copper mining industry has to do.
Yeah.
And it's been challenged by a couple of the, you know, the environmental type of organizations. And it was upheld in district court and also in appellate court. And, of course, our new attorney general then, he combined them and sent them to the Supreme Court. And arguments were held, I think, a couple of weeks ago, and we haven't had a decision yet. But, you know, my opponent worked for the mine for many, many years. And made his living that way. But he won't support the copper rule. And the copper rule actually gives the copper industry a very, very well-defined what they can and what they can't do. And it protects our groundwater. And, you know, they like it because there's no ambiguity. There's no, well, if you do this, it's okay, or, well, maybe this or this. And, you know, when you get into the ifs and the maybes and this, that, and the other, it's hard for a business to go down the path to make, you know, to be profitable.
Absolutely. And so we're fighting for industry in the state?
Absolutely. You know, and the copper industry is huge, and especially in Grant County.
And so we're between Arizona or between Arizona, Colorado, and Texas, essentially. And it seems to me that all of those states are thriving economically and we are not. But why is that?
Well, you know, I have some very, very deep convictions there. You know, I
well,
feel,
can we come back and get that
yeah,
answer?
Yeah, we'll come back on that.
We'll come back. I got a little Al DiMeola for you. I played Danny Boy yesterday in honor of Bill Clinton's, Danny Williams, Clinton's son, his half-black son who wants to be accepted by his father. That's a story for another day. A little bit of Al DiMeola here. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450. Got John Zimmerman here and Brad Cates waiting in the wings, rubbing his chin, looking like he's getting ready to take over the world, but he's pensive. Either that or he lost his pencil. But we'll be right back. And here is one of the most spectacular guitar pieces you'll ever hear. 619, Kelly O'Connell and Las Cruces, 523-1450. And I think I have your text friend here, 805-6180, 805-6180, to text. We'll be right back. And great days right before the election. Well, and it is 6:24. We got John Zimmerman here. And John, all right, so I'm going to do the rest of the half hour with Brad and then or with you, and then I'll switch over to Brad Cates. But so let's give the listeners the positive vision that you have for New Mexico. Why should people support you?
Well, because I'm a positive person, first of all. And, you know, I look at ahead, and, you know, you ask me what's wrong with New Mexico. And, you know, when we look at our state's history, it's been dominated by one party and one party only.
Uh-huh.
And you know, the Senate has always been controlled by the Democrats. The House has only been Republican one other time in our state's history, and that was 2 years during Eisenhower. And then, you know, Donna Anna County was actually responsible for turning the House this last election.
Yeah.
You know, there was three of us that were elected Republican. And so yeah, that's the tide of change that I see coming. And, you know, most of the people in New Mexico, they're conservative, and they feel like, and the sense that I get from knocking doors is we've been duped for many, many years. And, you know, fool me once, maybe fool me twice, but you're not going to fool me anymore.
But look at states with one party domination like California that continually struggle. California has the greatest set of, you know, it's got the incredible stretch of ocean. It's got Hollywood. It's got L.A. It's got San Francisco. It has got the natural beauty. It has got the best climate in the world, and they are struggling year after year after year because of the domination of one party.
Well, and part of that is, you know, their answer there is, well, we'll just raise taxes. You know, when you continue to raise taxes on somebody that works hard for what they have, then there's a disincentive, and you only have to look at you know, socialist like countries throughout the world. You know, 40 plus years in the Navy, let me tell you, I've seen it.
Yeah,
and
that's one party system. The socialist approach is one party.
That's right.
And look at Mexico, has been totally dominated by one party.
That's absolutely correct.
So we have two parties. If we have two parties, one in the Senate, the other in the House, the Senate is not going to flip. We at least have a struggle. And people have to justify their legislation. They have to work with both sides of the aisle.
Absolutely. And it's dialogue, you know. Then it's time to sit down and you know, you can still disagree with somebody and sit down and have a conversation about it. You know, and I use the example of husband and wife. You know, a successful marriage, husband and wife, they sit down. They don't agree 100% of the time. And, you know, they come to some kind of agreement. They come to an understanding. And, so, you know, the same thing needs to happen, I think, within our state politics.
Yeah.
And that's just beginning to happen in New Mexico. And, you know, another thing, if people really want to know how I operate, follow the money. If you follow the money, you can get to the root of everything.
So be more specific.
Well, if you follow the money, then you can tell where and why things are happening. And, you know, money is the root of a lot of evil.
Yeah.
I don't think all evil, but it certainly goes a long
way.
Well,
we've got money from the East Coast, from the former mayor, the billionaire mayor, former mayor of New York, who's buying ads to defeat House members in New Mexico. It's surreal.
Oh, it's really surreal. It's unreal how
and
much.
George Soros, the original bond demon, is buying right down to the accent, the German origin, who actually is Jewish and helped the Nazis go after other Jewish people. It's weird that best time of his life, he claimed. He is bought into the DA race in Albuquerque to the tune of $100,000. And he's trying to get the sheriff thrown out in Arizona.
Yeah.
So what these people want is to put their people into power and get control and take away people's freedoms.
Well, and a good example of that is you know, I mean, I wasn't going to even talk about the national scene, but a good example of that right now is the Department of Justice.
Uh-huh.
and what is going on there. And, you know, you can listen to the news the same as I can.
Yeah.
And, you know, what is coming out now, you're going, oh, my God.
A surreal level of corruption.
Is this really happening in
yeah.
the United States of America? And the answer is yes, it is.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's important to have a true two-party system. I think the balance of power. And the same as to be when we talk about our country as in a world scene, we need to strength through, you know, peace is through strength.
Right.
And because then you can negotiate through a good position. And, you know, we don't have that. We've lost that. We've lost respect throughout the world. And
yeah.
So, you know, those are just the very basics of the freedoms that we enjoy and that many, many men and women have given their lives for.
Okay. And so vote for me. You got 30 seconds to talk to somebody. What are you going to tell them?
I would say just look at my record since for 2 years, and you'll see that I've passed good legislation to help our National Guard troops, for medical. Look at my voting record. And I think when you look at my voting record, you're going to say, gosh, now he represents our values.
For pro-Second Amendment.
I am pro-Second Amendment.
Pro-freedom of speech.
Pro-freedom of speech.
Pro-freedom of religion.
Pro-freedom of religion.
Pro-capitalism and growing
economy. Absolutely. Absolutely. Keep part of what I work for, my fruits of my labor.
Thanks for coming in today. How do people get in touch with you before the race?
Well, they can reach me on my cell phone, which is on all my literature. That's 575-649-1217, or I have a website, which is votejohnzimmerman.com.
And can people still put signs in your yard?
Absolutely.
In their yard?
Well, I hope they put them in their yard, yeah.
I got a picture from a friend of mine in Miami, and he said this is the breeding ground of signs for the United States, and there were hundreds, someplace in Miami, hundreds and hundreds of signs that were stuck in one yard, so it was kind of funny. But thanks for coming on, John, and we appreciate you fighting for the American way and trying to keep a little more freedom here and get a dynamic economy started.
Well, you know, like I said, 42 years in the Navy, that's why I did what I did, is to preserve our freedom the way we enjoy it.
Appreciate it.
Thanks
a lot. Have a good day.
You bet.
All right, folks, we'll take a little break here and get into some Brad Cates and trying to schedule as many of the good candidates before the vote. But we'll be right back. 6:32 a.m. Las Cruces, AM 1450. 5:23, 1450. We'll be right back to shift into Brad Cates. All right, so just had John Zimmerman on, and we have Brad Cates, and Brad Cates is running against Mark D'Antonio at the district attorney's office. Good morning to you, Brad Cates. How's it going?
Good morning. Fine, thank you.
So how's the race going?
Yes, very good. Thank you. We're getting a lot of good support. I think some issues are coming out between my opponent and I that define the differences between us, and one of those is experience. What is the experience that it takes to run the good office? And I've got that kind of experience. I've got 30 years worth of senior experience, administrative, prosecutive, judicial, and legislative. And when you bring that to bear, you'll run a better office.
Yeah.
And I've got the experiences that aren't there now. And I think you'll see the difference after I've been running the office for a while versus the last 4 years.
Okay. And so what are you hearing, or what's your opinion in experience? What have you heard about the experience or the way the office is being run right now?
Well, I think the cases aren't being followed through. I think the prosecution efforts are misguided in many instances. But what I want to tell you about is what I can bring to that office that isn't there now. I was a federal prosecutor for a number of years in Texas. I ran an entire division at the U.S. Department of Justice, confiscating over $1 billion of international drug money. I've ran large teams. I've ran billion-dollar operations as the chief judge for the U.S. Department of the Interior, experienced lawyer in lands and minerals, as well as criminal prosecutions. I was assistant commissioner of immigration, who ran the entire program where we moved the Jews out of Israel, out of Russia, and moved them to Israel. I've run senior level programs all of my life. I was a state legislator for 8 years, and I've seen the production of good legislators and bad ones. That's why I'm so excited about John Zimmerman in the legislature. You know, I'm a counsel of the House Judiciary Committee, and when you see people as experienced as John, experience makes a difference. People who know how to sort the problems, how to problem solve. And we have that in John Zimmerman. I'm very proud to work with him.
Well, that's good. Now, I talk to a lot of attorneys, and I've heard for a long time there are problems with discovery, getting evidence in cases. And also, there's a second issue, which is there is a lack of thorough police investigation in some of these cases being brought to trial. What is your reaction to that when you hear that?
Well, those are just two of 10 or 20 areas, and you run a district attorney's office, and the feedback that we get is that the office just isn't run as efficiently as it should be. I have the experience to run it right. I have 30 years worth of experience in the criminal justice process, state, federal, as a legislator, as a staff member in the state legislature, as a federal prosecutor, as a federal judge, federal administrative officer. And these experiences I can bring to bear.
Uh-huh. Well, what are some of the changes? For example, if there were cases that didn't have a good police investigation on them, a thorough one, what would you do? What would your district attorney's office do differently?
The way the district attorney's office and the United States Attorney's Office and the U.S. Department of Justice is supposed to run is that you have your law enforcement people that put together cases. They're the cops in the case, and they bring it to the federal prosecutor. The federal prosecutor or the state district attorney assesses those cases. You have thousands of cases brought to an office, and part of good management is it's like a triage operation in a hospital, or it's just proper management in any organization. You tend to the most important things and don't get distracted by frivolous things. What happens in a badly run office anywhere is that people get distracted. They're running around with piddly cases. And the important stuff, the serious criminals end up not going to prison because you spend judicial time in the office messing with little cases. You see, in the overcriminalization that's happened in the last 30 years in the country, there were 10,000 federal laws 30 years ago. Now there are 300,000, just to give an example. There are so many laws, nobody knows what's right, what's wrong. I'll tell you, there's no business executive that doesn't break the law every day inadvertently. There's no citizen that doesn't break the law.
Three felonies a day, isn't that the where we're at? They say there's so many federal laws out there that you probably break three felony laws a day.
Judge, U.S. Federal Appeals Judge Alex Kaczynski in California says that Congress needs one federal law a day. It'd still take them 10 years to get rid of all this, and they wouldn't even make a dent in it. Too many laws. No one knows what their priorities are supposed to be. So our entire judicial system runs around like chickens with their heads cut off, just willy-nilly here and there. And that's why you have ethical problems. You have ethical problems with the U.S. Department of Justice, for example. I mean, like we see, anybody who took law school 101 knows that the attorney general doesn't meet with a party to a case as she did with Bill Clinton, talking about grandchildren. Maybe they were talking about grandchildren, but it's called the appearance of impropriety. And that's a tenet of our judicial system. If it looks wrong, you shouldn't do it. And then she says to the attorney general, well, then I won't involve myself in the case. Well, wait a minute. You're the prosecutor.
You're already involved.
And when the cops, that is the FBI, brings the case to you, now you're saying you're not going to look at it. You'll do whatever they say. Well, no, that's not the role of the cops, the FBI, or the role of the prosecutor. You resign from the office.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we got Brad Cates here. He's all fired up. And we just had Mark on, I think a week. Was it last Friday? I think it was last Friday, so about a week ago. We'll take a break here. 642 Kelly O'Connell AM, Las Cruces AM 1450. And they say a new broom sweeps clean. Is that your theory, Brad?
Well, I'll be doing some sweeping when I'm district attorney.
And others will be doing weeping That's Brad Cade's theory. We'll be right back, folks. It is the fourth day of November and very pleasant outside. We'll be right back. It's Kelly here, 646. And I got a few headlines for you. October jobs plus 161,000, unemployment 4.9%. And you know, those high paying jobs that you're dreaming that you and your family might get? Don't worry, Taco Bell's adding 100,000 jobs. And in the meantime, 2 terabyte hard drive with Clinton White House emails missing from the National Archive. They believe that many, many data systems from the various presidential administrations have been stolen. And AP refused to cover the story. Other stuff coming up. Trump comeback in New Hampshire could put him over the top. Very, very tight race. Hillary got confused yesterday, forgot where she was, kept stating the wrong city, and even forgot who she was campaigning for. She may have been having an out-of-body experience while Satan worked on his little hard drive that he put in the base of her skull. But just kidding. So anyway, we got Brad Cates here. And all right, so Brad, does it matter who the DA is?
Well, of course it matters. The district attorney's office is charged with defending and protecting all of us in the community. This is where people are prosecuted, which is a serious power that the state has. And that has to be used two ways. It has to be used to protect innocent people, make sure that their rights are adequately protected. And it also means taking guilty people and putting them in the state prison. And it means having a district attorney who can sort the difference between the two. Everybody who does some little crime, someone has a mental problem does not need to be in the state prison. Someone with an addiction problem does not need to be in the state prison. I mean, some do, but generally speaking, that's not the right way. That's not the right disposition of the case. Little crimes, we don't need to make felons out of people so that never again the rest of their life can they have a decent job. We've turned so many crimes into felonies, and then that means that person can never again get a good job, never again pay taxes, never again be a productive member of the community. But we keep reading in the paper every day about people who are out on bail or just weren't prosecuted or fell through the system that are violent criminals. And I'm sorry that their mama wasn't nice to them and daddy run off, but I'm sorrier for the victims when they're breaking in your homes, when they're raping, when they're stealing and killing that little girl in Albuquerque. Those kind of people need to be in prison.
Right. Okay. So, but you believe that your experience in evaluating cases will make a difference at the DA's office?
Well, I do. I've had experience, as I say, in the judicial process as a judge, as a prosecutor, both in the federal and state level, as an administrator, as a senior corporate attorney. I've seen the entire spectrum. People who just are prosecutors all their life, they have blinders on, and they need to see that life's bigger than that.
Well, some of them can be very self-righteous and say that God and the state are the same thing.
Well, it's not. We know there's a separation in that, and prosecutors are not infallible, nor are any people. And the wisdom of years of broad-based experience is what makes a good prosecutor. Know when to put someone in prison and when to try to better society by helping that person in the rehabilitation program, for example.
Now, if there was problems in cases, in particular cases with incomplete police investigations, what would you do about that?
Well, as we said a while ago, it's the cop's job to investigate a case. District attorney's office, they're the lawyers. They're supposed to evaluate the case once the cops have put it together. see where it fits in the law and see what the proper disposition is.
Right.
They have different roles in the system.
And if you don't have a good, thorough investigation, it comes down to he said, she said, which nobody wants to be in that situation. One of the two people is telling the truth, the other one's telling a lie, and you're hoping that the jury has the ability to be a truth detector on something like that.
Well, but we also hope that earlier in the system, we're not going to waste the state's resources of frittering around with cases that don't need to be before a jury.
Right.
Juries, their time's valuable. The court's time's valuable. The state has limited resources. We get the important stuff before the court and move the rest of the stuff into pre-prosecution.
All right. So I've got a question for Cates, and I'm going to ask him in just a second. 523-1450 is the call-in number, 805-6180. And we're talking about the DA's office. We'll be right back. Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, and on KOBE. 651. All right, so, Brad, I just got a text from somebody, and let me read it here for you now that I've got the text machine back, 805-6180. Had a little vacation. It's feeling good. What would Cates do differently? Differently is spelled in all capitals from D'Antonio. What would you do differently?
I think I'd run the office differently. It's about management and prioritization, utilization of resources, and putting the right people in prison and trying to rehabilitate those that can be rehabilitated. It's just an overall management structure that would be different. I have run lots of programs at the federal, state, local level, and all the branches of the government, and I've been successful in every one that I've done. And I would take those experiences and creativity that I have, and I would use that to reformulate the office in a way that the taxpayers are getting more value for their money and where citizens get more justice for the money spent.
All right. Now, you and there are some really good people down at the DA's office, some of which I'm on friendly terms with and others I just know from cases. But you're claiming that there needs to be new leadership down there. That's the reason you're
running.
That's
right. That's precisely right.
All right. So in these cases where discovery is lingering, this discovery, by the way, is the 10-cent word that lawyers use for and the court uses for evidence. What are you going to do to cure that? There's a problem with setting up interviews. There's a problem with getting evidence out. And I haven't had this with all my cases, by the way.
Well, it's called working smarter. That's working smarter. And what you do is you get the job done in a way that better efficiently uses the resources you have. You set up discovery right. You set up a system where it's done right.
All right, so that's interesting. Okay, well, so we're coming up towards the end of the hour here, Brad, and anything else you want people to know about how your DA's office would run?
Well, yes, I think another point that I've mentioned several times to you, Kelly, is about ethics. People are not happy with the government in general, not happy with the county government or the federal government. We see an appalling lack of ethics locally, nationally, people with connections, people with resources, seem to be able to do what they want, and the rules that apply to the rest of us don't apply to them, and that's not right. If something smells wrong, I'm going to have an ethics unit. We're going to look into it. We're going to try to make ethics count in this county. Maybe we can't at the U.S. Department of Justice anymore, but we can start here, and we can make ethics a priority for our county.
All right. So anyway, Brad, thanks for coming on the show. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me, Kelly.
You bet. Folks, we'll take a little break here. Here's something, though. Don't forget this Loretta Lynch and Bill Clinton meeting in Phoenix.
In Phoenix, in a very interesting meeting on the tarmac at Sky Harbor International Airport, as ABC 15 has confirmed, former President Bill Clinton was in town and met up with U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch as she was arriving in Phoenix. Now, this meeting took place just hours before the release of the Benghazi report, so we asked her about it.
I did see President Clinton at the Phoenix airport as I was leaving, and he spoke to myself and my husband on the plane. Our conversation was a great deal about his grandchildren. It was primarily social and about our travels. He mentioned the golf he played in Phoenix.
It doesn't end there. We're told the private meeting on board her plane lasted about a half hour. Lynch then told us there was no discussion of Benghazi, of State Department emails involving Hillary Clinton, or any current matter having to do with her office, Dan.
Of course not. All right, folks, we'll take a break here on the hour, and I want to thank our guests for coming in. And little Al DiMeola, very exciting. 523-1450 to call in. 805-618-02 text, and we'll be back to do it over again in the next hour. AM Las Cruces, KOBE. 6:59 on the button. Good morning, Kelly here, and the just had on John Zimmerman and Brad Cates. And 523-1450 if you want to call in. Now I've got some breaking news for you on a terror threat. Police in three states warned about potential terror threat, and this is from this morning. On CBS News.
CBS News has learned about a potential terror threat ahead of the election. Sources say that U.S. intelligence has alerted joint terrorism task forces that Al-Qaeda could be planning attacks in three states for Monday. That, as you know, is the day before the election. It is believed that New York, Texas, and Virginia are all possible targets. The credibility of the intelligence has not been confirmed. Jeff Pegues is in Washington with new details. Jeff, it's very disconcerting to hear this on this Friday. Good morning to you.
Good morning. U.S. authorities are taking this threat seriously while still assessing the credibility of the intelligence, but counterterrorism officials across the country have been alerted out of an abundance of caution. Law enforcement sources tell CBS News a threat comes from Al-Qaeda, and intelligence points to attacks taking place in New York, Texas, and Virginia. But the threat information provided no specific targets for possible attacks in those states. As Election Day approaches, federal law enforcement is planning for several worst-case scenarios. Earlier this week, an alert to local police warned of polling places being seen as attractive targets for lone wolf-type attacks by individuals motivated by violent extremist or sovereign citizen activity. A senior FBI official says the Bureau is working closely with the Department of Homeland Security and other federal, state, and local agencies to disrupt and identify potential threats. It is not unusual for there to be an increase in the volume of threats leading up to significant events like holidays or even an election. An official says it is important to investigate those threats thoroughly. Anthony?
All right. So just to let you know about that, and I wanted to put on something here. I've got Steve Pierce calling in a few minutes, and I do have Mary Lee Souls, who's scheduled to be on, I think, Monday, just to let you know about that. And here is from this is from Julian Assange saying Trump will not be permitted to win. Oh, and we've got a phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hi, good morning, Marty.
Hey, Marty, good morning. I can barely hear you. Nice to get your call, and what's on your mind?
Yes, sir. A couple of weeks ago, you had a young lady on there by the name of Connie.
Yes.
And she had said she had gone down to vote, and someone had already taken her spot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that freaked me out enough that I did something I don't usually do, and I early voted last week. So thank you, Connie, for the heads up. I'm new to the state. I've heard just a lot of stories like that that I didn't hear back when I lived in Oklahoma. Seems like there's a lot of people substituting votes and stuff. Just, I don't know, just stuff I never heard about when I lived in other states. The other thing is every day I have to drive by not one, but both of the Trump signs.
Yeah.
That have been defaced.
Yeah.
Hey, leftists out there, leftists, listen to me. Every time we drive by those signs, we see what your idea of tolerance is. So thank you. Thank you for doing that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because every day it just makes me, I was a Cruiser, Kelly. I came more to Trump's side because united we're going to stand, divided we're going to fall.
Absolutely. There is so much corruption in the Clinton organization. It's astounding. It is absolutely astounding.
I've been given a lot of thought to your hypothesis or theory that where the religious spot in the brain should be, leftist.
Well, what else do they have? What else do I mean?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't explain why my own father and my own brother and these other leftists, they're still going to vote for Hillary, even with everything. What's going on? They're going to vote for Hillary.
Kind of reminds me of these situations where there's spousal abuse and the spouse keeps getting beat up and then coming back and dropping the police charges, refusing to testify, making excuses. I mean, what higher level of contempt for the average person does Hillary need to express, you know?
I just have no answer for that, sir. It just blows my mind. These people I'm talking about, these are all college educated, intelligent human beings. These are smart people I've known for 35 years.
Yeah, yeah. Hey,
and they're going to vote for Hillary.
Well,
so,
you know, pray, I don't know. Pray for him. I got another call here. Thanks, Marty. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Donna.
Good morning, Donna.
Hi, I'm just calling to say that I've already voted, and I've voted for Brad Cates, and I encourage everybody out there who has not voted, go to the polls and vote for Brad Cates for district attorney.
Very nice. Anything else, Donna?
That's it.
Thanks a lot. All right, folks, let me give you just a taste of this. You know that I have not spent a lot of time ginning up images of voter disenfranchisement or voter fraud, but it got my attention when Assange said this, Trump won't be permitted to win. I thought this was rather a remarkable statement. Whether it's true or not, check it out.
A batch of emails from Hillary Clinton's campaign. RT presents the next part of an exclusive interview given by the Whistleblowers website's co-founder Julian Assange to renowned documentary maker John Pilger and Dartmouth Films. They discuss one of the most shocking leaked letters, which allegedly proves that Hillary Clinton knew the Saudi government has been directly funding Islamic State. RT's Polly Boyker investigates.
The closer it gets to the U.S. elections, the juicier the WikiLeaks revelations become. And the man behind all this isn't shy about meting out his own judgment, too. The editor of WikiLeaks, Julian Assange, has spoken exclusively to veteran journalist and filmmaker John Pilger for his company, Dartmouth Films. They spoke here at London's Ecuadorian embassy. And in that interview, John Pilger asked Julian Assange the questions that a lot of his detractors probably want to see answered. Things like, why the vendetta against Hillary Clinton? And does he have a thing for Donald Trump?
What is WikiLeaks doing? Are they trying to put Trump in the White House?
Trump would not be permitted to win. Banks, intelligence, arms companies.
Well, they all want him.
Big foreign money, etc.
Yeah.
Is all united behind Hillary Clinton.
Hmm.
And the media as well.
Hmm.
So media owners and even journalists themselves.
Donald Trump's lack of support from any corner of any establishment is pretty much the opposite of the situation that Hillary Clinton is in. But can too much support be a bad thing?
Well, here's what I took away after listening to this, and it reminds me of a great quote by, I think it was Jonathan Swift, about you will know when a genius is in your midst because the dunces will all be in a confederacy against him. And that led to a great book. If you haven't read it, drop everything and go to Amazon or go down to COAS and buy A Confederacy of Dunces, probably the greatest comedic novel that I've ever read, and maybe certainly one of the greatest ever written. Let's take a break here, and I'm getting ready for Steve Pierce to call in, I think, in 5 minutes. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523-1450. We'll be right back. Folks, I got a Steve. I've got Steve on the line here, but he called my cell phone. All right, so have Steve here on the line in just a second here. I've got this very weird clip. Steve.
Yes.
Yeah, hey, thanks for calling in, and sorry, I must have sent you guys the wrong number, but how's it going?
That's all right. That was going great.
Well, look, I was looking forward to having you on the show today. Unfortunately, it's by phone, but it's still great to have you on. How are things going?
Well, we're working the state very hard. It's just 5 or 6 days, I guess 4 days now till election. The excitement is raising out. Mr. Pence was in Las Cruces a couple of days ago. We were there at that. Mr. Trump in Albuquerque, we were up for that on Sunday. So just right now, a lot of excitement, a lot of pressure.
No doubt. And you've been through a lot of races, but how is this race different?
Just the kind of the meanness from the other side. We're just trying to stay focused on the issues. And nationally, both candidates have let it become far more personality-driven and policy-driven. And I think that people are kind of backing up from that, saying, hey, let's get down to the issues. Then this last week when the Obamacare premium started hitting everybody's mailbox, I think that the outrage is what's sparking the change in the polls. I don't think it's the latest email thing at all. People are scared to death at the cost increases they're seeing. People are calling in tears at what they're going to have to pay for insurance. And it was promised to us that it would be completely opposite, that we're going to see a decrease. Yet I have one constituent with at least a premium, at least $1,200, maybe $1,300. That's compares to $250 that she used to pay. Another one is up in the $700 region. People are just alarmed. And so Mrs. Clinton said she will push that forward and continue it. Mr. Trump says he'll repeal it. I think that clear difference between the two is going to drive all the way to Election Day.
All right. So you've got to admit, it's just absolutely surreal of what's going on in D.C. What's the feeling of all of this revelations coming out and the extraordinary level of corruption that has been associated with Clinton Incorporated?
Yeah, it's for me, I just think I can't be surprised every day. And then I am surprised by even more corruption. The net worth that they have built up by selling access, the pay-to-play scheme that they've been involved in is horrendous. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. And for her to be receiving as much support as she is from the Democrat Party is amazing. The thing for me is the whole Benghazi deal, that I was in Vietnam and I was there listening when we would leave soldiers in harm's way because the rules of engagement wouldn't allow us to go protect them. For her to have sat there for 13 hours on the Benghazi thing and never sent help is, to me, atrocious.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely That's just, it's heartbreaking to hear that. But I mean, from what I understand, they've got secret recordings now that show that they were selling influence from the Secretary of State's office the entire time she was in there. And when they got $20 million out of one, some sheik to have a meeting, and it's just, I mean, if she gets elected, I just don't, I know this is about your race, not hers, but I don't see there will ever be any end to the corruption.
Yeah, it'll continue and it'll become like a third world country. The reason that America has been great is because we have not been as corrupt as other countries. There's always been pockets of corruption here and there. But overall, our system from the highest level down was one where people were on either side were disciplined and they lived within the law. The lawlessness that her team and Mr. Obama's team brings forward and just ignoring the Constitution and putting executive orders in place to go around that. The thing that the Supreme Court has done in sort of closing its eyes to the Constitution and twisting themselves into a pretzel to redefine what a tax is and what a mandate is, you'd think that the very underpinnings of our republic are hanging in the balance here.
Well, and I mean, it seems like people on the left are either indifferent or they're almost giddy. There are some people that seem to get a kick out of the idea that she was selling access to the office. I don't understand that.
It's they want to win no matter what. Myself, I would like for my party to win, but I'm more hopeful that our country will win, that people will have this beacon of hope that shines throughout the world, a place to come where they can get away from the corruption, a place to come where they can find justice. And we're not finding that. That's the unsettling thing about the whole IRS attacking not just people. Nixon attacked people through the IRS that he didn't agree with. Obama attacked entire belief systems so that if you were conservative, you were the target. And that is something we have not had to worry about in this country, and now suddenly we do.
Yeah, all right. So on a positive, more positive note, what is your race about in your mind? What are you fighting for? Why should people think about pulling the lever for you?
I just see that our future forward is through the free market and through individuals having a freedom over their lives. It's about liberty. My opponent says she would increase the amount of government control in our lives. I just think that people don't want that. And so it's a clear-cut choice. Either going to move towards more government control with my opponent, with Mrs. Clinton, or you're going to vote for the free market with Mr. Trump and myself.
Yeah. Now, Trump has really come up in the polls, and then there have been people that were caught out that refused to support him, that really kind of caught out in the open. And it must be a strange time to be a Republican in D.C. and just look at all the maneuvering.
Yeah, it's a strange time anytime you start working not by principle but by calculations. And I think that's what our Republicans in D.C. are guilty of. They're trying to fine-tune it down to, well, he said this and she said that, and therefore I can't. Listen, you got two choices. Either she's going to be president or he's going to be president. You're either supporting him or you're de facto supporting her. So I didn't ever see all of the response, all the reasons for the response that the speaker made. He called that a nationwide call with all the members of the House, the Republicans, 3 or 4 days after he made that decision, was trying to he was spinning it in a very positive way, and then they opened the mics, and every single person got on there. They finally, they were very busy and had to get back to work. But
so there was support,
yeah,
or people, not support?
Yeah, people were eating his lunch up for bailing on our team. They said, we can't defend him, but he's also our candidate, and you're either backing her or you're backing him.
Yeah.
After the 10th caller, he said, okay, I'm busy.
Well,
call me later.
How is it that Paul Ryan, who seems like a smart guy, doesn't see the most obvious thing in the world, that you can't abandon your leader who's driving the bus and not expect a horrific car, a wreck?
Yes. They have these political consultants all across the nation. The Republican Party is infected with them, not so much Democrats, but to an extent. And they're worried about the fundraising, and they're worried about who gave the money and what they're going to say. I say that I ask for people to invest in my campaign. I will ask for the donations, but you're giving it to me, and I will act the way that I think is best for the country. I act with principle. I don't put my finger to my tongue and then see which way the wind is blowing, and that's what a lot in Washington are doing, and what you said is very adequate. When the wind changed directions, now they suddenly they're caught wrong, whichever happened. If you stay steady, if you've got your rudder deep in the water and just keep moving to your destination, doesn't matter where the winds are coming from, you're steady and people appreciate and know that. So this idea that we're going to change our sails every time that a little wind change occurs is one that's really penalizing Republicans in Washington right now.
Yeah. And yes, got to keep a steady hand on the tiller. All right. Here is one of the strangest stories I've ever seen that just popped up. On Drudge, spirit cooking, Clinton campaign chairman invited to bizarre satanic performance, menstrual blood, semen, and breast milk. So, I don't know what is going on in the DNC or the Democratic Party at the highest levels, but it looks like they're engaging in witchcraft or satanic rituals or whatever. I mean, it seems like the DNC has become an insane asylum.
I'm finding that a lot of Democrats out here are feeling alarm at where the party is going. In Luna County, since May 30th, 1,000, they only had 6,400 registered Democrats, which was still 70% of the county. That's at the end of May. Today, it's like 5,400 people are dropping their registration because they're seeing this unraveling of a value system in their party, and they don't know what to associate it with. They're finally just saying, hey, I give up. It's too much. My folks were registered Democrats all the way into my adult life. They finally left and said the party left them, and I'm finding that to be happening at a greater pace right now.
Yeah, and I mean, but why would any person who's a Democrat be indifferent about the Clintons, Hillary Clinton personally enriching herself through the State Department? And I don't get that. I mean, how can you be indifferent about her making herself rich through the State Department when we are in this chaotic and extraordinarily dangerous time?
I can't, my mind won't work that way either. We're just stuck in the same deal. I can't fathom how that people can look the other way and say that it's not important. They will be worth $1 trillion by the time she finishes four years as president, if she gets elected. This is unprecedented in American history.
They say that there's a $2 billion on the books for the Clinton Foundation, but $100 billion off the books, and they've never kept a paper trail. They've never kept the paperwork necessary for a charity. And they say if it was anybody else, they would have lost their charity status long ago. But they will have $1 trillion. That would make the money that they're in control of now makes them 50 times richer or at least 10 times richer than Trump. This idea that she's standing up for the poor. But Steve, you were calling for Democrats to back you.
Yes, absolutely. And a lot of Democrats do. They still are loyal Democrats, but they also are alarmed at which direction the country's going. They also appreciate the fact that I'll get out and fight for the everyday man and woman. This whole deal where we got the Goss Water Settlement was a Forest Service. It took us 12 years to get that. The family had been fighting it 25 years. We got this settlement since 1968. We got the Obama administration to sign an order that gave us our water rights out in four counties in the western part of New Mexico. We have passed the Nahavda bill and put it over in the Senate. That's a very bipartisan effort. We passed the Repatriation Act, another bipartisan effort. So they see that I'm very conservative, but they also see that we're looking to work with Democrats across the aisle in Washington and out here to make the country better.
And what are we fighting for? What are we ultimately fighting for? It is a confusing time. We're distracted by the Trump and Hillary war, but there is a bigger battle that's kind of playing out behind these two characters. What are we fighting for? What's the battle over?
Well, the battle is over liberty. As you give up more government control, more control of your life to the government, liberty diminishes. And as corruption, you're talking about the corruption of the Clintons, that's an untold tax. Corruption is simply a heavy tax. And as that increases, the weight on the people is going to increase because this money doesn't come out of thin air. It's usually coming from corporations who are having to charge more for the products because what it costs them to get access to the White House, so they charge you more. It's coming in the form of higher utility prices as they put regulations on that shut down the electric sources that we have and go to the higher prices of the alternative energies, the wind and solar. So liberty, access to your own capital is a form of liberty that's being removed right now. They're extorting more of it. They're taking more of it through the higher premium costs on Obamacare, through higher utility costs. So that's what we're fighting for. Our economic and our social liberty is at stake, in my opinion.
And religious liberty.
Absolutely. Religious liberty is probably at the top of the list. That's going to be the one targeted most quickly.
And it's no coincidence that they don't import Christians from the Middle East, these poor people that are getting beheaded.
Syria has a lot of Christians there, and they're only like 1% of the people coming in. We're bringing folks that we don't know anything about. The Christians actually have lineage on themselves. They go all the way back. Just if you read in the New Testament, you start seeing that, or in fact, even in the Old Testament, that this person had this son and these daughters, and then they can follow their line all the way back. And so these Christians in the Middle East, in order to know who is real and who is not, track their lineage still. And they can tell you who is Christian, who is not. Our State Department has access to that, but the Syrian state is completely, it's gone. It's not functional. And the state can't tell us from the state point of view who is safe and who is not safe. So we're accepting people we know nothing about. And
well,
here, as Clinton wants to increase that number of people flowing in
by 550%. So
yes.
Let me ask you one thing, just a little bit off the beaten path here, but people are interested in this. Hillary wins and she gets indicted. We want to know what happens in that situation. The other one is she appears to be very feeble. If she gets sick before, just say she wins, but she gets sick and can't assume the office, what happens?
I'm assuming that the vice president would move forward if she is in office and is indicted. She will stay there. She will do exactly the same thing Bill Clinton did, and that is fight it all the way. The indictment occurs in the House. That's the impeachment. The actual trial begins in the Senate. And the Senate would never convict because it takes 50, but one person could block. It would take 60 to even take the issue to the floor. So they would always have somebody willing to block that. So I just think she could be indicted and never, and should be held up to charges, but would never move forward because they are so expert creating the law.
And she can wipe her own slate clean, right? Or Obama would do that before he went in. He left?
Sure, he can. Absolutely, he could do that. And
pardon.
So, again, this idea of corruption, this idea of nobody standing on the values is deteriorating the very fabric of our government right now.
It's amazing how far we've fallen in 10 years.
It is amazing, and I think that's one reason people are so angry, both Democrats and Republicans, independents alike. They're all angry. The angry vote in the Democrat Party went to Sanders. The angry vote in the Republican Party went to Trump. And so you're seeing this still playing out. Even after the election is over, the anger is not going to dissipate. People are furious out here on the trail. They appreciate that I've stood up against my leadership. I'll fight Republicans as quickly as I'll fight Democrats. And so people seem to be reassured that I'm a scrapper and I'll go into it, but they're worried about the bigger flow of the whole nation. So while they express appreciation, this is across party lines, they express this appreciation that I'm out here with them in the fight. But it's nationally, we have a lot that we have to worry about.
Well, Steve, I know you're on a tight schedule. Anything else?
Oh, just always I tell people that the strength of the country does not come from our president, doesn't come from Washington. if you and I work across our differences, if Democrats, Republicans, and Independents will work together out here, the fabric of the nation will be fine. We'll be in good shape. I worry more about what is dividing us than who's going to be elected as president.
Yeah. And the strength of the country in the great part is from talk radio, Steve. That's my theory.
I agree with you wholeheartedly that freedom of speech is big.
Absolutely.
It allows us to get the alternate viewpoints out from the mainstream media.
Thank you so much for everything that you do.
Thanks,
good luck
always,
in the election.
I appreciate your talk show. I appreciate you always getting the truth out there. So keep talking, my friend.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
All right. Goodbye.
Bye. All right, folks, we'll take a break here. Good to have Steve on, and I'm going to have Mary Lee Soles on, I think, Monday. So people were asking what the name of the song was. It's Splendido Sundance from Al Di Meola. Probably the greatest guitar piece that I've ever heard. 739 Kelly O'Connell AM Las Cruces AM 1450. 523-1450. I'll get back to your text in just a second. Hey, it's Kelly.
Little interesting information on DirecTV. There's only one channel that's having temporary technical difficulties, and you can't get it, and that's Fox News. Everything else you can get.
Well, hopefully it's having problems because there's too many people trying to watch it.
I don't think it has the effect.
Okay. Anything else?
A little Friday morning conspiracy theory.
All right, man. Thank you. Have a good day. All right, I'm going to try to get in as much as I possibly can in these last few minutes. I want to play a clip for you just to have in the back of your mind of something a general said that was, I didn't even know where it was coming from. They were talking about the possibility of getting into World War III. Here is this general, head of the Army, and Army Chief of Staff General Mark Milley. Listen to this. It's just surreal.
Where are those who try to oppose the United States? I want to be clear to those who wish to do us harm. I want to be clear to those around the world who want to destroy our way of life and that of our allies and friends. The United States military, despite all our challenges, despite our op tempo, despite everything we've been doing, will stop you and we will beat you harder than you've ever been beaten before. Make no mistake about that. Other countries, Russia, China, Iran, and North Korea, went to school on us. They closely watched how we fought in 91 and 03. They studied our doctrine, our tactics, our equipment, our organization, our training, and our leadership. And in turn, they revised their own doctrines, and they are rapidly modernizing the military today to avoid our strengths in hopes of defeating us at some point in the future. We can now, and we will remain in the future, retain the capability to rapidly deploy, and we will destroy any enemy, anywhere, anytime.
This just came out a couple of months ago, and when I heard it, I was like, I could not believe it. All right. It just sounded like we are getting ready to go to war. The warmongering is, it's just scary to hear it. I've got a clip here, though, on what's going on with the... Ooh, I hope I didn't lose. Oh, no, here we go. This is the electoral map tightening up. I know you guys are interested in this, so check this out.
This is on the record. On a night when the national polling average continues to show a 2-point lead or less for Hillary Clinton, changes in the battleground states point to an easier, though still difficult, path for Donald Trump. The Real Clear average of national polls showed Mrs. Clinton with a 1.3 lead in a two-way race and a 2-point lead in a four-way. Amid reports that betting money is moving to Donald Trump, the odds against him have shrunk to just under 70-30. That's well below what they were just a short time ago. For more now on the state polls and the changes in the Fox News electoral map, we turn to correspondent Shannon Bream.
5 days to go, and the electoral map is shifting again. And all four of the major changes we're seeing this time work in favor of the Trump campaign. New Hampshire, which has leaned consistently Democrat, is now moving into the toss-up column. Ohio, a major electoral prize with 18 votes, has been a yellow toss-up for weeks on this map. Now it shifts into the leaning GOP ranks. And two states we have had classified as leaning GOP now move into the solidly GOP column, both Indiana and Missouri turning dark red. If the vote was held today, would the changes be enough for Trump to win, or does Clinton stay on top? With 270 as the magic number, let's break down the overall map. The solidly GOP and leaning GOP states now total 192 electoral votes together. Those yellow toss-ups across the map, they account for another 63. Combining the solidly Democrat and leading Democrat states in dark and light blue gets Clinton to 283 electoral college votes. So it is still an uphill battle for Trump to keep all the solid and leading GOP states, pick up all the toss-ups, including prizes like Florida with 29 votes at stake, and pick off a state that's leaning Democrat, something like Pennsylvania with 20 votes up for grabs. Otherwise, it's a win for Clinton.
Shannon, thank you. So amid all this welter of national and...
All right, so we're running out of time. Let's do a little bit of weather for you. Kelly O'Connell, and here's this. People are responding strongly to this song. This is the greatest guitar song I've ever heard. Forget Stairway to Heaven. All right, so here I'm just we'll do a little bit of a lightning round here. I'm gonna cover one of these stories Monday, but I'll just do a little teaser right here on massive election fraud. This is the claim from InfoWars, Alex Jones.
You have found the mother load of election fraud.
Yeah, it tells you how to do everything.
Is it not clear that Hillary and the media are trying to sell the idea that there is an election fraud and that Trump's going to lose by a landslide when the polls and everything else show something opposite?
Let me put it this way. Of course, things have been very surprising of late. But if she is still viable in any way, whether or not she wins, she will win.
That's the claim. I'll play some of that for you on Monday morning, Joe, blasting President Obama for making unfounded claims about the Clinton administration investigation. Pardon me.
Obama doesn't want to meddle. I just wonder, though.
Wow.
Because when they were saying what a great man he was, wow, and how much integrity he had, was that meddling as well? I'm curious.
Well,
I'm dead serious.
I've got to say, I have absolutely no idea how Barack Obama has the audacity, and I will say the audacity, to make those statements. When, as the Wall Street Journal points out this morning, and I remember, and you remember very well, he came out in November while FBI agents were still gathering evidence before they had all the evidence in their hands. He said in 2015, there was nothing here to see, that she had not done anything that would cause any problems to national security. He not only said that, I believe in October of 2015, he doubled down as the chief law enforcement officer in America and undercutting the FBI investigators again.
All right, so that's Obama for you. Here is the FBI source Clinton Foundation case stronger than email case.
Chief Washington correspondent James Rosen has been working his sources as well on this story. He joins me now here in the studio. James, good evening. What are you hearing?
Good evening, Brett. Much of what we have heard, but a lot of it's confirming. For example, there are really two parallel cases the FBI has been investigating for over a year. One is the Clinton emails case. The other is the Clinton Foundation case, and agents are hard at work on both right now. The Foundation case, as opposed to the emails case, is seen by the field agents at the FBI. My source is a well-placed source inside the FBI. It is the Foundation case that is seen as the stronger of the two, in part part because of the way the emails case has been conducted. The field agents, for example, cannot believe that Director Comey authorized the provision of immunity to two of Hillary Clinton's lawyers, Heather Samuelson, who reviewed the emails, and Cheryl Mills, who was the secretary's chief of staff, when normal procedure at the FBI would be to immunize one of them and then pressure that individual to flip for and deliver the other. On the emails case, this source, I asked, is there anyone at the FBI who believes Secretary Clinton's private server wasn't hacked? And the answer was no. And the source said to me, it's pretty certain that she was hacked. It doesn't take a computer rocket scientist to figure that out.
And they're digging into that.
They're digging into it, and they believe as many as 5 to 7 individuals or hostile actors might have breached that server.
And the split we just heard about with Catherine and I've talked about, real? From yes. Your source?
Yes. The field agents are very disappointed that more hasn't been done on both cases, but particularly in the case of the foundation investigation. The field agents believe they have the goods for a case.
They do have the goods for a case, from what I understand. Now, here is from the Guardian.com UK paper. The FBI is Trump land. Anti-Clinton atmosphere spurred leaks, say sources. And the fury against the leader of the FBI could not be abated, and so his wife said, you've got to reopen this or it's going to destroy the entire FBI. FBI casting dark shadow on Clinton campaign. Here's a little bit on that.
Full crisis mode as hundreds more deleted emails are released, casting a shadow over her campaign as a nominee dispatching power hitters to help her out against that growing FBI investigation.
Garrett Tenney's live for us in Washington, D.C. with the latest on that. Garrett, good morning.
Heather and Abby, good morning to you. We now have 350 more of Hillary Clinton's emails from her time as Secretary of State. Yesterday, the State Department released this latest batch, which is part of the 15,000 emails the FBI recovered in its investigation of her private email server. This latest batch of emails are mostly duplicates of ones that were previously released, but it again highlights how Clinton's team deleted thousands of her work-related emails while she herself was telling the public she had turned over every single one. Adding to Clinton's problems, sources close to the FBI's investigation tell Fox News that authorities are now almost certain that at least up to 5 foreign intelligence agencies accessed her server and emails, some of which contained classified information. Last night on the Kelly File, Congressman Jason Chaffetz said Clinton is in trouble regardless of what happens on Election Day.
Well, look, no matter if she's elected or defeated, the Congress has a job to do, and that is to clean up the mess that Hillary Clinton made at the State Department. This is potentially one of the largest breaches of security in the history of the State Department.
Hillary Clinton's campaign tells us she has no plans to discuss or even mention the FBI's investigation.
How convenient, huh? Well, I guess it's all part of the great right-wing conspiracy, huh? Thanks for tuning in today. I hope you have a great weekend. I'm looking for anything else. Oh, Julian Assange, Clinton ISIS funded by the same money coming out of the Middle East. Terror warning on Monday. 95 million people, almost, well, 95 million people not in the labor force. John Podesta, campaign manager for Hillary Clinton, practices occult magic, and FBI sees the Antichrist in Hillary Clinton. It's very, very troubling. Kelly O'Connell will take you out with some Splendido Sundance, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, KOBE. Have a great weekend. Ciao.